It went to deposition first, since we were dealing with two states. In that deposition, which was videotaped, lasted 3.5 hours, at which time the district attorney just asked Zachary if he knew the difference between a truth and a lie, and then pretty much from there turned it over to the defense attorney, and Zachary was in that room with a bathroom break in between, but for about 3.5 hours, asking questions that I'm sure would not, a judge would not have allowed to be asked. But that's really not what the issue is here. That happened the year after the abuse. The following, about 1.5 years later, Zachary finally went to court. The deposition was not allowed to be in court then, although it was videotaped, and the defense attorney pretty much had asked all the questions. My issue seems to be that the videotape was current, the information was accurate. If you're aware with small children what their verbal skills, what they recall, and that in a difference in a 3-year period between age 5 to age 8 is entirely different. And I'm a supporter of the legal system, but let's get the child's most accurate story right. Whether he told it to a CSD worker or a policeman or a different agency, maybe a psychologist, whatever, or if it's on a videotape, use that. Don't put them in front of a judge and a jury 3 years later and ask them to say in terms what happened then, because it sounds contradictory. Get the information firsthand and use it from there.
You are in support of using some form of videotaping then?
Some form of videotape and some form of hearsay. The other thing I would like to tell you is in our trial, since the CSD worker was not there in person and the psychologist who Zachary has dealt with now for 3 years was not there in person, none of that was able to be admitted as evidence. The only evidence we had there was what Zachary said. And as far as them only being on the stand, or what Zachary called the truth box, only for a short time, Zachary was on for over 4 hours with a break at about maybe 1.5, 2 hours in there. So I think unless you've really sat through and seen some of those courtrooms, you really don't know. Zachary was lucky. His natural father opted to leave the courtroom while Zachary testified. We told him that it was extremely difficult for Zachary to face him, and he wanted the truth to come out as much as Zachary did, and he stepped off the stand. He did not admit to doing it, but he did leave the courtroom while Zachary testified. Since first disclosing, as far as how this legislation, the two bills, would have affected us, is since first disclosing, Zachary has been forced to, and I'm saying forced by the legal system, to repeatedly tell and retell the story of the alleged abuse. It has not varied in any of those retellings. He has been either before a judge, before a jury, or giving a deposition 5 different times. We just learned Friday that within 90 days he'll have to go back to court again and tell the whole story over again. Although a videotape deposition, like I said, was taken, it couldn't be used as evidence in a criminal court in Iowa. Repeatedly, Zachary would begin to heal from this ordeal, going to his psychologist, started to do well again in school, only to turn around and have to do it again. And it's the retelling and the reopening of wounds. Before coming here, since there are some people in the state legislature and the Senate that I know, and that we know as family members, I asked Zachary if it was okay, because it's his private hell. If it gets made very public. And I asked him what he wanted me to say. I just want to be a normal kid again. I'm sorry. exactly. There's only five when this started. And since that time, he's also expanded on the amount of information that he's remembered because he feels confident. Because, you see, children who are sexually abused think it's their fault. They think they did something. And with the extensive therapy that he's gone through, he's come to realize how adults control these situations. That they're in charge, not five-year-old children. Zachary's come a long ways. He's forgiven his father for what he did, but he can't understand it, and he can't understand why he has to go back time and time again and say the same story. He's already told one person. He's told two. He's told juries. And he sat up tall, and it made him feel good that he told the truth. As he discloses more information, there's a chance for a greater charge to be filed against his perpetrator, and also a greater chance for a conviction. I never planned for any of this to happen to Zachary. Sexual abuse was something that happened to those people. It doesn't happen to upper middle class America. It doesn't, right? It happens to the other ones. Forgive me if I offend anybody, but I grew up thinking it always happened to the welfare mothers or people who had multiple boyfriends, things like that. But it happened to me. It happened to Zachary. And I only wish that he didn't have to relive it each time with repeated testimony. Someday, perhaps, he'll be able to grasp everything that's happened to him and why. I really think with the passage of some of these laws that there'll be a chance that he won't have to go through it again. We told him that he would have to start within the next 90 days to go back again. And the nightmares, the night terrors, started again on Saturday. Not comfortable for anybody to sit here and talk about their private hell. And I know I'm speaking very emotionally and not quoting laws or what's being done now in this state and what's being done in other states. But I don't think it's about adults. I think it's about small children. I have a picture here of Zachary about the time that the alleged abuse occurred. He didn't even know those words. He had to show us in the actions. He doesn't know. He doesn't know what it's like. We're responsible for these little kids. And we're responsible for helping them testify in any way that they can. We're not saying that we should have witch hunts, by no means, but let's provide a forum where children can be heard. Thank you. Any questions?
Betty Freya.
Betty Freya from Salem, Oregon. In the interest of time, I just want to go on record as supporting what Robert Reed said and Bud Byers. Thank you.
Thank you much, Betty. Velma Hart. Hartvig, say to you.
Madam Chairman, members of the panel, my name is Velma Hartwig. I'm chairman of a group called FAIR in Eddyville, Lincoln County, Oregon. I'm also a mother. I have raised eight children, and my heart goes out to these people, and I do feel that children need to be protected. But I also feel that innocent people need to be protected. A couple of hundred years ago, the people of this nation got tired of the tyrannical government. So they picked up their guns and they picked up their pitchforks and they went after the skunks. They got their very wise people to write a document to protect the people of this new nation from being subjected to the same ills and from some future government. The framers of the Constitution felt English laws dealing with children were oppressive, unfair, and unjust. So they deliberately left them out. When they finished, they had a pretty good piece of work. They sent the Constitution to the 13 colonies for ratification. Imagine their surprise when the leaders of the colonies said, "No way. We've been subjected to searches of our homes and persons because someone suspected we had done something wrong. Thrown in jail without charges and refused a fair trial. We've had our property confiscated, our weapons taken away, a religion forced on us, and did not have the right to speak our mind. We ain't going to sign." Our forefathers, wise men that they were, then wrote what we call the Bill of Rights to address these problems. The leaders of the individual colonies then signed gladly. Until recently, we have enjoyed the protection of the Constitution of the United States, but that isn't true anymore. 25 years ago, child abuse was a crime and was treated as such. Accusations were investigated and sufficient evidence was found. The accused was indicted, arrested, and tried in a court of law. Proper warrants were issued, proper evidence presented, and witnesses were properly questioned. Not so today. We are told our Constitution does not apply in juvenile cases. Children are grabbed from schools and other public places, taken to undisclosed locations, examined and questioned without notifying the parents. Children are taken from classrooms, interrogated, and even strip searched on suspicion. Homes are invaded and searched, personal records and possessions taken away without a warrant or without any formal charges being made. Children are kept from the extended family so they can be trained to testify in court. I've heard both district attorneys and CSD workers state, just because a person is found not guilty doesn't mean he is innocent. In other words, if you're reported for child sex abuse, you are guilty. Even if the person making the report has something to gain, has an axe to grind, or is mentally incompetent. Their excuse for all of this is, we would rather err on the side of the child. I don't recall voting to repeal the Bill of Rights. Did you? Child abuse, especially sex abuse, has grown into one of Oregon's most profitable industries. Children are routinely manipulated and coached by mental health workers, caseworkers, and prosecutors. Unfounded opinions of so-called experts are considered gospel in many courts. This industry has become a bonanza for many people who have little ability and are willing to make lots of money, gain recognition, and be looked upon as experts at the expense of innocent victims of their accusations. Why? Because they don't have either the brains or the integrity to make it on their own. Entire careers are based on prosecution of innocent people. That's why this legislation is so dangerous. It can and it will be misused. We already have a problem with CSD. Anyone who doubts that statement should talk to their colleagues on the Human Resources Committee who listened to shocking testimony last July about blatant abuses perpetrated in the name of protecting children. Since most cases are under the jurisdiction of CSD, it will be those same people who will become the witnesses. CSD has already been given almost unlimited power, generous funding, and no accountability. Now we have a bill designed to take away the right to face one's accuser. This bill is not about protecting children. This bill is about an easy win. They found in spite of intensive training, children will often tell the truth when questioned by a skilled attorney. I've watched several young children testify. Not all young children are frightened. Not all young children are traumatized. And the ones I heard about, my heart goes out to them. But that isn't the general rule. But they did mess up thousands of hours of careful training and forget the details of the story they've been taught to tell. Think about it. If you were accused of a horrible crime that you did not commit, would you want to have a third person telling his version of what he thought might have happened? A person with vested interest in the outcome of the trial? Or would you want to get at the truth? Please look at, use your common sense and look at the motive behind the bill. And just something I would like to say other than my testimony, I think that we do need some change in the laws. But I think those changes need to be in the investigation. I think these cases need to be investigated.
I want to say, this committee is drafting some legislation on investigation issues, so we'll be hearing from that a little bit later. Other questions? Senator Brockman?
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, I missed it if you said it. What does FAIR stand for?
FAIR stands for Fairness, Accountability, Integrity, and Responsibility. And our group is designed not just for people who have been victimized by the system. What by that I mean people who are innocent victims of the system. We also respond when...
We have people who come from places like Klamath Falls that I want to get to today. And we have committee members that need to go off to another committee. We're going to talk about trying to reschedule some of these times, but I want to hear at least from the people who've come from a long distance on these bills and make sure that we get to a few of them. Nancy Patterson, where are you from? Okay. Let's then, I don't have anyone else who signed up to speak to 275. Is it okay if we go on, folks, to 276? I would call, actually be...
About 516, it seems to be running in tandem with 275.
Actually, we do have someone new who signed up on 516 from Klamath. I want to make sure we get Barb Costa, who's come from Klamath Falls, on today, who signed up first, really, on Senate Bill 5. So let's move then to 516 and have... let's have Barb come up first, who is in support, just at least till we get you on the record and hear from the people who... If we run out of time, at least we will...
I'll make it very short.
Take your time. You've come from this far. You deserve to have...
I'm Barbara Costa from Klamath Falls. I'm a volunteer and a board member for Wednesday's Child. We treat sexually abused children as well as adults molested as children. And I'm representing a new committee we just formed called Citizens Against Child Sexual Abuse. And I'm a little upset. I basically, the two, Bill 276 on the statute of limitations and the videotaping, if I may just quickly go over these two. Child victims of sexual abuse often disassociate themselves from the act as a way of self-preservation. It may take years before they can allow themselves to deal with the issue of their abuse. Currently, if it takes over 3 years, it's too late to punish the perpetrator. And the devastation and humiliation these children go through when they are at last able to deal with the molest, only to find that the offender is unprosecutable, it's just tragic. I personally know a child who was repeatedly raped by her father from the age of 9 until she was 12. She was unable to tell anyone about these attacks because of threats to her person and to other members of the family. These attacks stopped only because her parents were divorced for other reasons. She was 15 before she was able to face the fact of these repeated rapes and confide in someone. As a matter of fact, I personally took her down to the sheriff's office to report this, and we were 1 month too late. In the meantime, her father is remarried to a woman with a teenage daughter, and he happens to be working in the church with other teenage children. He's free to molest again. This man also molested the other two daughters in the family. One was older, and the young one now is 10 years old. Neither one of these girls had ever told anyone else. The 10-year-old is just now starting to have flashbacks and starting to remember. But there again, it's too late. The 3 years is over. So it won't do any good. I just feel that it's imperative that the statute of limitations be extended in order to help these victims and prosecute the perpetrators. It's time we start caring about the victims' rights and assuring the victims indeed that they do have these rights. And, excuse me, the same goes for the videotaping. I'm just going to, these children are so frightened when they have to go to court. I worked with two children, two little girls who were molested, and they were absolutely horrified. I had to call at 7:30 in the morning, and I had to run over it, and I sat and held the little girl. She was, didn't want to go to court. She didn't want to suffer the humiliation of telling other people in public, in a courtroom, what had happened to her. If she had been able to have this videotaped, you can have the perpetrator there or have him at least behind her or something, but it'd be a little bit less threatening situation for the child. And when we work with these children, it's really horrifying, and something has to be done to start protecting their rights rather than worrying about the perpetrator's rights. And I think that's basically all I have to say. But I appreciate you letting me come on early.
Are there questions of Barbara? With respect to either 516 or 276, which is more clearly the statute of limitations.
I have one question, Madam Chairman. Are you aware of Senate Bill 275?
Yes, I had planned to have that one, and I forgot to sign up for it.
Okay, do you feel
And I'm all for that,
that
one, too. Yes, I definitely am.
I just wondered why you weren't speaking to that one.
That was my fault. I promised I'd sign up for it, and I'm...
Do you have written testimony? Could you get us written
yes.
testimony with respect to 275, and we'll pass
I
it on?
I certainly can. I'll drop it off right over here.
Great. Are there any other questions? Senator Springer.
Just briefly, for the witness, it's been represented in some of the testimony here today that not only have we seen a great increase in the number of reports reflecting a greater recognition, willingness of people to come forward and address this problem, or perhaps an increase in the actual number of these incidents, but it's also been suggested that reports are exaggerated or children are often falsely making these accusations. Could you just share with us briefly, based on your experience, your response to those suggestions?
Children basically don't lie. They don't come up with these words and descriptions and tell you with the dolls, show you what happened to them, not these little tiny ones. They just don't lie. And then this teenager, she's a beautiful girl, and she started acting out, and now, since she suddenly remembered, you know, they block these things from their minds because they are so horrible. And I just feel that you have to start believing these children. I don't want an innocent person accused unfairly, but believe the children, listen to them. When you work with them, you'll see that they aren't lying. We have standing room only now. We have a waiting list to come to Wednesday's Child. There aren't many agencies like ours, and we're all a volunteer-based organization. We have three paid people. All the rest of us volunteer anywhere from 20 to 30 hours a week working there.
Thank you, Ms. Costa.
Thank you very much.
Any other questions? Thank you very much for coming all the way from Klamath Falls. Let us hear at least... how many people are going to lose here? One, two, three. I'd like to...
There's not, 3:15, then there's another
okay,
hearing.
Okay, do we have... I guess I wanted to have... let's deal with 516 with respect to the videotaping, and since we've had specific testimony on that issue. And I do want to call Corey Streisinger and John... Corey, whoever you, so we can get that on the record and get your testimony in people's hands. Then we will reschedule as best we can the folks who come to deal with the other two bills.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Corey Streisinger. I'm Governor Goldschmidt's legal counsel. I'm here today to testify in support of Senate Bill 516, which would permit several types of alternatives to normal courtroom testimony for some young victims in sex abuse cases. With me is Betty Ucatil, Assistant Administrator of the Children's Services Division. I'd like to give a very brief overview of what the bill does, Betty will then give a couple of comments about the policy need for the bill, and then I would like to again briefly describe the constitutional issues. Senate Bill 516, as a previous witness has mentioned, is drawn from a model rule of evidence and is similar to legislation which has been adopted in a number of other states. It would allow a judge, in a case involving sexual abuse of a child under the age of 10, to consider first whether the child would suffer severe emotional or psychological harm if called to testify in a normal courtroom setting. If the judge finds a substantial likelihood that the child would suffer severe harm from normal courtroom testimony, the judge may permit the child's testimony to be taken outside of the courtroom, either by videotape deposition, which would then be replayed in court, or by closed-circuit television broadcast to the courtroom. I should note that the bill is limited to cases involving allegations of sexual conduct performed with or on the child by another. In other words, it applies only to child victims of sexual acts. If the child is called as a witness concerning sexual abuse of another, the bill would not apply and rules of normal courtroom testimony would govern. Several states have gone the further step to apply to witnesses of child abuse. This applies only to the child victim. When a child's testimony is taken by videotape or closed-circuit television under Senate Bill 516, the bill would ordinarily permit the defendant to be present with the child in the place where the testimony is taken. If the judge finds, however, that the physical presence of the defendant would contribute to the likelihood that the child would suffer severe emotional or psychological harm, the judge may order that the parties be placed so that the child could not see or hear the defendant while the testimony is being given. This would permit, for example, the use of one-way closed-circuit television or the use of some sort of screening device. I'd like now to turn the bill over to Betty Yucatil to describe some of the policy reasons and then come back to the constitutional issues.
Thank you. My name is Betty Yucatil. I'm Assistant Administrator for Children's Services Division. The process of disclosing child sexual abuse and the resulting investigation and court action usually has major impact on the child. This is in addition to the damage that is done by the abuse itself. Some children are able to use family and treatment support to get through this time intact. Other children are fragile, may lack close family support, or may be too young to understand that they can be protected from the abuser. In 1987, there were 469 victims of child sexual abuse that were 3 years of age and younger. We have seen a trend in the last year of child victims of sexual abuse being younger and of an increase in the more serious, intrusive forms of abuse such as rape and sodomy. Children who have been harshly threatened or physically injured, in addition to the sexual abuse, need all the protection that they can get in order to safely offer their testimony. Senate Bill 516 provides that protection. It is a reasonable solution to prevent some children from being further victimized by the legal process. Nationally, 37 states have statutes that address video recorded testimony, and 27 states have statutes that address testimony by closed circuit television. We would urge your support for Senate Bill 516.
The portion of Senate Bill 516 that would permit videotape or closed circuit testimony to be taken out of the presence of the defendant obviously raises concerns about a defendant's rights under the confrontation clauses of the United States and the Oregon constitutions, and you've heard some testimony earlier today about those two clauses. Confrontation clause cases are fairly rare, but as you've also heard, the United States Supreme Court addressed issues very similar to those raised by this bill just last year. The case is Coy versus Iowa, and a citation is in my written presentation. I believe you also have copies of the case. That case involved an Iowa statute which permitted child witnesses to testify either by one-way closed-circuit television or from behind a screen placed so that the child could not see the defendant. The statute did not require any judicial findings of potential harm to the child, and none were made in that case. By a 6-2 vote, in an opinion written by Justice Scalia, with Justice Kennedy not participating, the court concluded that the use of the screen in that case had violated the defendant's Confrontation Clause rights. In its opinion, the court noted, however, that it had, and this is a quote, in the past indicated that rights conferred by the Confrontation Clause are not absolute and may give way to other important interests. The state of Iowa in that case had argued that the need to protect child witnesses was such an important interest. The court pointed out, however, that there had not been those individualized findings of the need to protect these particular witnesses, and it left for another day the question of whether any exceptions of this nature could exist. Two of the six justices, Justice O'Connor and Justice White, who had joined that six-vote majority, also wrote separately to address this point further. And in a concurring opinion by Justice O'Connor, pointed out, first, that these statutes, and this includes Senate Bill 516, frequently do not even raise Confrontation Clause issues because they permit the defendant to be in the same room in many cases with the child witness while the testimony is being given. Even in those cases where the witness and the defendant are separated, however, Justices O'Connor and White concluded that if the court makes a case-specific finding of necessity, the Confrontation Clause may give way to the compelling state interest of protecting child witnesses. Justices Blackmun and Rehnquist dissented in the Coy case, and these two justices would have held that the Iowa statute satisfied the Confrontation Clause even without case-specific findings of harm, so long as the defendant was given full rights to cross-examine, which they regarded as the key to the Confrontation Clause. Where does this leave us with Senate Bill 516? Well, as Justice O'Connor's concurrence points out, the bulk of Senate Bill